The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to Tennis Connected Studios for September 5th, 2016. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review week one at the US Open as well as look forward to week two. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Hit them up for week two action at the US Open as well as for the upcoming Australian Open. I'm very happy to announce this week I am in New York and Parsa is right here beside me, so there's no Skype contacts or anything like that, so it's all good, baby. How's it going, man?
Good. No Skype issues, no complaining, Twitterverse, Twitter world, whatever it is. Let's just reach out and give some compliments as we get bashed a little bit because of our...
But it's been good lately, though.
I guess. Yeah. The audio quality is not so good, but the content you guys seem to love. But now you get both, so it's a serious treat. Once a year, we get to do this.
Yeah.
And so enjoy it. Let's get at it.
Okay, Parsa, so, you know, final Grand Slam of the season obviously is well underway. We're heading now into week two, Labor Day Monday. Some nice matches on deck today. We have some quarterfinal matches set up on both men's and women's. And still some fourth round encounters to be held today, weather permitting. But I think the weather's going to be fine today. I don't think it's going to rain. So just the first, you know, first off, you know, I walked into, you know, the grounds about 5-6 days ago, and I was really overwhelmed. I thought they've done an incredible job. They've, you know, revamped it. The grandstand looks incredible. You know, all of the side courts have more seating. I think there's right now, Parsa, over 57,000 seats in the facility. And that's, I mean, that's going to be, that's amazing.
And that's not even with the new stadium that's going to be built, the new Armstrong.
Exactly. So they're going to have that. So next year they're going to have a makeshift stadium in the parking lot. They're going to shut down Armstrong. And then in 2018, you're going to have a brand new Armstrong with a retractable roof. So, I mean, you know, US Open is, for me right now, I know the Australian Open has three covered courts, but I would say that, you know, there's an argument there that the US Open right now is the best facility in the world. That's just my opinion.
I mean, incredible. I've been there too, obviously. And
you've been there a million times.
A million times. I've seen the progression over the years. I've went the first time 25 years ago, 30 years ago now. And it just the way it's changed from basically a park tournament to what it is now is unreal. And it just continues to impress. And what a show and a showcase. And look for an exciting week too. I mean, we saw that with yesterday's match. I mean, what was the highlight for you for this tournament before I get into mine?
Well, to be honest with you, the highlight A was the overall facility in terms of matches. Yesterday's Nadal and Pui match was excellent. There were some great first round encounters between like Isner and TFO, Taylor Fritz and Jack Sock. That was a really good one. I mean, just the overall environment, you know, they're doing a great job with the music in between changeovers and sets and the whole ball of wax, I would say. Everything is on point. Probably though Nadal and Pui yesterday was the highlight in terms of
match. I mean, for me as well, you know, that one and also Madison Keys' 5-1 comeback
against Osaka.
I mean, that was pretty crazy, but it's happened quite a bit this tournament, I would say. Guys down match points, fighting and riding the New York energy and really just taking it and putting everything out there. And I think the New York crowd has reciprocated and really appreciated the effort that these guys and women are putting out there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So Parsa, with that said, let's jump into the draw, you know, looking at so far what's happened so far in the event and looking forward. We have Serena Williams in the fourth round, still going for her 23rd major, so she's while alive and going forward. She has Shidova today to play the winner of Halep and Suarez Navarro. Other fourth round matches feature Radwanska, Pliskova versus Venus Williams, Madison Keys, as you mentioned, that great comeback she had. She flopped pretty much yesterday under the pressure against Wozniacki. I look at that as a pretty major upset, considering their game styles. But I mean, what an event for Wozniacki. I mean, she's down to what, 71 in the world. Now, I mean, she's going to obviously move up tremendously.
And looked terrible that first round match.
Yeah, she looked terrible. We were watching it, I believe, at your house before I was heading over.
On live stream, yeah.
And it was like, you know, like she sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And now she's in the quarterfinals. She looked horrible.
And playing some serious tennis. Yeah. Serving, being aggressive, being able to pick when to be aggressive, when to back off. Pretty crazy stuff. She has consistently always said, though, that New York makes her, and that she just feels alive here, and if she can have a good U.S. Open, it has historically turned her year and a couple of years around, just from her event here, and it's going to happen again for her. A great run.
Absolutely, and I think that for me,
and a winnable quarter.
A very winnable quarter, and when you look at, you know, an under the radar performance so far this tournament, how about last year's finalist Roberta Vinci? I mean, coming in as the seventh seed, and she's in the quarterfinals to play Kerber, who obviously is, you know, top form, playing amazing tennis. She took care of, you know, a tough match last night against Kvitova, second match on Ash night session. First match, pardon me. And, you know, so she won that. And I think, Vinci's going to give her some problems there just because of the unorthodox nature of her game, right? She's going to hit some slices, come in, and, you know, Kerber likes to kind of dictate from the baseline and pull you out wide. But I think Vinci is going to take away that dynamic by, you know, forcing herself to come in and playing aggressive tennis. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And you had some interesting thoughts, Barca, coming into this week's show about kind of the change of on the women's tour.
Yeah.
And what the dynamic is in terms of game styles and how players are performing, and maybe you want to share that with everybody.
Yeah, well, it's brought up by my colleague at Chi Chi Tennis on Twitter. It's CHICHI10S. He brought up a very good point. He said, look at who's left in the women's draw. I mean, you're now, once some of the quarters are set, you're looking at a majority of players now are counterpunch style. People putting balls in the court, moving the ball around the court, manipulating their shots, and less of the brute power players, the Kvitovas, the Madison Keys. Those players are being eliminated by consistent athletic women that are running around the court, that are footwork-based players, that are field-based players, who also can pop shots when the opportunities are granted, which is very, very similar to how the men's game has been the last, 5 to 10 years. The women have now made that transition, and it's led to more exciting. It is debatable and possibly fact that the women's draw has actually been more exciting than the men's, besides this Nadal match that was epic yesterday. Mm-hmm. Until that match, there wasn't that much excitement on the men's side. I mean, Djokovic has been cakewalking through, but the women have had a ton of just excitement and great matches. And, so it's an interesting point, and I think it's very, very valid that there is a clear shift now in the women's game. And I think look for great things coming up from the WTA Tour. And for those players that are up and coming, you know, perhaps it gives them a little bit of hope. If you're the one that's running around and manipulating the ball around the court, hey, you know what? You're one or two shots away from making yourself a name here. So Roberta Vinci is a great example. Back-to-back years, significant results, and a very, you know, she can beat Kerber. There's no doubt about that. So
I think so. I don't think, I still favor Kerber in that match, just because of the aura that she has around her this year. You know, she's feeling like, you know, I'm the player now. You know, apart from Serena Williams, you know, watch out for me. I have the confidence. She's won now, I think, 51 matches this year. I mean, that speaks for itself, you know.
But Vinci's not going to be, you know, intimidated by this Aurora at all.
Not at all.
She doesn't give a...
Not at all.
You know.
I think this tournament for her is all gravy.
Yeah.
You know, she's just coming in. She's I think, reacted well to the pressure of last year. And she's like, okay, I'm just going to go about my business and, you know, slice and dice and get in there and see, make some good things happen.
So for your dark horse, did you pick Sevastova from Latvia?
Not at all. I mean, she had an amazing tournament. She beat Konta in the previous round. She's got Wozniacki next, which is a winnable match, I think, for both. She took out Muguruza, who looked awful.
in her second round. What was that?
I don't know. She's not reacting really well after winning the French Open, right? She hasn't made it out of the second round of any major, Wimbledon as well as here. And those are two surfaces that realistically should favor her. Everything should favor her game. She's got a great game. But I just think she's not reacting well to that pressure of now being a reigning Grand Slam champion. So that's something she's going to have to iron out because, you know, with her presence and her charisma and her game, she's somebody who can really, you know, spearhead the WTA Tour and take it, you know, take maybe over after Serena's all said and done, whenever that is. But present day, are we still on course, Parsa, at a collision course for Kerber Serena final? And I caution before you answer that, you know, we still have, for instance, Serena, I foresee her getting past Shadova today. And then Halep potentially, or Suarez Navarro. I think she will take care of her easily, but Halep could be interesting. And then she could have her sister Venus in the semifinals. Honestly, I don't think that Venus gets there. I think that Pliskova is going to give her a lot of problems today. And even if she gets by her, Radwanska is going to be super tough. So it's looking all the more that we're going to have probably a Kerber Serena final. But, you know, what are your, you know, final thoughts on the women's side here?
Yeah, we're getting some consistency. I think that's what's really interesting. You're getting Kerber there. You're getting Vinci, who was there last year. You're getting not Wozniacki or Sevastova, but, you know, Venus has been making noise. Pliskova's been making noise. Radwanska's been going deep. Halep and Serena Williams have all been consistently there, including Suarez Navarro, actually. So you're getting some consistency this year from the WTA, which has been always very challenging for us to sort of gather. Mm-hmm. And that being said, I think the better the quality, believe this, you know, and I'm not joking about it, the higher the class that's left in the draw, I think it favors Serena Williams.
I think so too. Yeah.
And I think the better the player, the more on she's going to have to be. And for that reason, I think she's gonna take this title again.
So, Parsa, one note that I just thought about right now is just backtracking, and you're talking about kind of a shift in the women's game in terms of playing styles and who's succeeding. I've definitely noticed this year, and again, it's something I think that hasn't been talked enough about on Twitter and in a lot of articles that a lot of writers have written over the fortnight thus far. That's the court surface. Court surface, for me, is definitely playing slower, 100%. And, you know, you had a couple of years back where the U.S. Open was far faster than Wimbledon. It was just like lightning quick. And, you know, guys like Federer, for instance, would really, you know, do well on that. But does the slower surface allow, you know, more of these counter-punching type of women to progress deeper in the event? Because obviously with the ball skidding more, that's going to favor some of, you know, maybe even the bigger hitters.
You know,
they're still there.
Yeah.
They're still, like Madison Keys was making a decent run. Venus is... hits the ball huge, you know, Serena hits the ball huge, but does that come into the equation at all?
I don't know, and I may see it a little bit different. You know, I don't know how much is the grit in the sand and the surface versus the weather has been terrific in New York. You know, the wind has been very, very low, the heat has been high, which makes the ball travel through the court and bounce higher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's one of those things that you're not sure what the factor may be. You know, possibly the new courts and things like that. You know, it could be that. It could be, I don't know, all sorts of different kinds of things. But, you know, could it be? It's very, very possible. But I also think there has been this seismic shift in the women's game. And I think we're starting to see these well-rounded players. And soon we're going to get some ladies attacking the net, Nima.
And some of the nuances, I mean, that the average tennis fan doesn't take into the equation. Obviously, you know, balls are always changing. You know, there are different altitudes and climates. Second week for me in the U.S. Open this week, until the weekend that I saw, is going to be relatively cool. It's not going to be that hot today. I don't think tomorrow. Oh,
the second week is going to be, I just looked at it this morning.
Yeah.
Right now, 5 minutes ago, it's sweltering.
It's coming up, but not today, though.
Not today.
Yeah.
Not today. But as it goes on, I mean, we're talking 90 degrees, which
Okay. Yeah, that's what. But in terms of, like, you know, that's something that people don't, I think, take into the equation as much as they should, right? Like, when you look at today's conditions, you know, is that going to alter or favor somebody's game? Yeah, like you're showing it right now. We're getting Thursday, Friday, we're into the 90s, even Wednesday's in 87.
I mean, that's smoking hot.
Yeah, and then Thursday is going to be completely sunny, no cloud cover, so that's going to be pretty crazy. So, and then we're getting into the final weekend, it's going to be hot too. Saturday's final, if they have it at night, it won't be too much of a factor, but Sunday's even in the 80s, right? So, yeah, I mean, so I think that's something maybe to watch out for, but with all of that said, do we still go with the Kerber and Serena final here?
I believe so.
Yeah, and then
it may not happen, though, on Kerber's side. I don't know.
May not. May not happen on Kerber's side. And how interesting would it be, like, ironic would it be, if Vinci is the one to end Kerber's run at becoming number one?
It could happen.
Yeah. And
that very well could happen. Because, you just like you said, she's a smart player.
Yeah.
She's not going to let her hit that forehand out wide. She's not going to let her dictate from the center of the court. And so instead, she's going to give her things that she's going to have to deal with her weaknesses, shots that she's going to have to deal with her weaknesses. So we're going to see exactly how solid Kerber is. And you know that Vinci can fly around the court and she can make her hit extra balls. And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think for me, just because of, you know, what's in front of us currently, I'm probably going to have to go with, you know, just a Serena-Kerber final again. With Serena, I think winning that match is going to be tough. I think three sets, but I think, you know, somehow she pulls that out.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay, Parsa. Now moving on to, you know, the men's draw, which I hope really, you know, kicks off tonight, especially with actually, you know, in about an hour with Del Potro and team. I hope that's a nice one. And then later tonight, looking forward to that Murray and Dimitrov match, which we will both be at live, which is going to be great. So let's dive into this one and see how it's going. So we had, you know, Djokovic, what a crazy draw he's had. He played Jurij Janovic, who completely didn't want to be there in the first round. And dare I say, Djokovic really didn't look like he wanted to be there either. A lot of controversy off the court, you know, that I'm sure a lot of hardcore fans know about. And then, you know, he gets a walkover in round two, plays only six games in round three against Yuzhny, and then plays Kyle Edmund, who was completely overwhelmed yesterday, except for the third set where he got up a break, but then Djokovic, you know, just reeled off the last few games and won 6-4 in the third. He takes on Joe Willisanga in the quarters, the ninth seed, who has, you know, very, very professional effort now for me this year. I mean, he made the quarters of Wimbledon as well, took Murray to five sets, even though he faded away in that fifth set. Played against Sock yesterday. Obviously, everybody's going crazy for Sock. Armstrong completely, you know, packed to the rafters. You know, he takes him out 6-3, 6-3, 6-7, 6-2. So very, you know, I think decent effort there. I mean, Sock had to throw everything at him just to win that, you know, that one set, and it was 9-7 in the tiebreaker. So that's obviously.
And then inexplicably, Sock took that bathroom break and then didn't even show up in the fourth.
And it's
very,
like,
weird.
You got to keep it going. You got to keep that going. But with that said, I think, you know, a decent tournament for Sock. He beat Cilic in the previous round, who had a little bit of, you know, some injuries going on there. But nevertheless, he's a former winner here only a couple of years back. Won Cincy. So that's a great win for him.
Talk solid effort. Talked about Lucas Pui.
Yeah, Lucas Pui. We'll get to him in a second. But I think, you know, talking Sock just for a moment.
I don't think he's worth our energy, man.
I don't know. I mean, he's got a lot of work to do still to make that next, you know, step to really. I mean, Parsa, you know, you look at American tennis and all of these guys coming up. There hasn't been a quarterfinalist on the men's side, American, since 2011. That's Andy Roddick. You know, God
bless. And I remember when it was like, oh, this is the first time that there isn't an American in the quarterfinals of the Grand Slam. Of any Grand Slam or something wacky,
yeah.
Whether it was the U.S. Open or some crazy stat, you know, 8 years ago, and now it's just, it never happens.
Never happens.
It just doesn't happen anymore. It's,
and then, but that's, you know, the reality of it is that Isner's getting old.
But Isner, you know, your best player being Isner recently, up until now, Steve Johnson. But he's been to the quarters one. He can't get out of the third round. Is like, forget it. It's impossible for the guy. So
he can't. And then Querrey's up and down, even though he had a decent Wimbledon, taking out Joker there. And Sock, for me, I mean, even though he's getting better, his kick serve is tremendous. I mean, that thing was just flying off the court against Cilic. You know, he's going to have to just, you know, work on his point composition, get even fitter, and then not fade it's away in that
fourth set. I think professionalism, demeanor.
Yeah.
I think there's some things there that are, you know, major X factors as you start climbing the ranks. I mean, the bar has been set by these guys, Nadal, Federer, Joker. I mean, these guys are true through and through professionals. I mean, I don't know in any other sport if you even have to be this dedicated as these guys are pushing, because it's an individual thing, and then they're pushing each other to the nth degree. You're talking about Joker having some personal problems off the court, and it's affecting his on-court play. Like, what? Like, you have to be stable everywhere in order to have a chance these days. And so, you know, for Jack Sock, it's something that that we have to take into a major consideration, and you know, he's got to make, I think, some difficult changes.
Absolutely. And I think that, so Parsa, you know, we're going to go down this. So we got a couple quarters already set. Joker is probably going to take on Tsonga tomorrow night. Tsonga's beaten him on six occasions, pardon me. I think it's 15-6 for Joker. So he's been obviously tailing away from everybody, not only from Tsonga. But, you know, six times is still good. That's a lot of wins. And I mean, I think that he knows how to play him. I think he's going to bring the noise tomorrow night. You know, he's going to feed off that crowd. And to be honest, I mean, you know, Joker hasn't had to play any, but I mean, Janovic is coming off of injury. The guy's a head case. He doesn't even, looks like he doesn't even care about tennis. You know, then you have a walkover, Yuzny pulling the ripcord after six games. And then you got Edmund, who, great effort for him just to get into the fourth round, completely overwhelmed. But then Tsonga's, you know, consummate professional. He's been in the quarters of numerous slams on numerous occasions. So I think that's going to be a tough test. I think you might even see four or five sets there. Still think Joker is the favorite. We cannot say otherwise, but, you know, look out for Tsonga there to maybe, you know, cause a potential upset. Moving now down, we get into a really interesting all-French quarter between Lucas Pouille and Gael Monfils. Pouille pulling off a tremendous match, 8-6 in the fifth set against Rafa Nadal. I mean, what a jaw-dropping match that was. You know, comes out, wins the first set 6-1. Nadal rebounds 6-2 in the second set. Pouille comes back, you know, showing his mettle in the third to win it 6-4. Rafa saying, you know, wait a second, wins the fourth set 6-3. And then back and forth, Nadal up, you know, 4-2, 30-all, 30-love in the fifth. And Pouille's like, wait a minute, you know, he keeps banging away with his backhand down the line from the baseline, breaks back, takes it all the way to the limit, to the end. You know, saves. He was 6-3 in that fifth set tiebreaker. Nadal comes back to 6-all, has that routine forehand, like you said, and he just misses that. And then Pouille hits that down-the-line shot at the end, and you know, he falls on his back, and he can't believe it. But, you know, his third straight five-setter. So, first of all, I mean, if I had a hat, I would have thrown it on the court. How fit is Lucas Pouille? And another thing a lot of fans didn't mention, because, you know, I'm on Twitter all the time, Parsa, is this guy also made the quarterfinals of Wimbledon.
Yep.
So he's coming up nice.
Yep.
And he's going to, for sure, I think, break the top 20 after this result.
Has to.
And, you know, Richard Gasquet said a few months ago that Lucas Pouille will shortly become the top-ranked Frenchman in the world. And I think Richard Gasquet knows what he's talking about, because, I mean, how can you say otherwise? I mean, this guy has shown heart. He's shown determination. He showed me yesterday that he's got a big game. He's a very, very, very fit guy, which is huge in men's tennis.
And can think clearly under pressure.
Exactly. And I mean, you're playing against Rafa Nadal. And yes, he's not at his best. And yes, he's not at in his pomp where he was, you know, the Rafa Nadal of 3, 5, 6 years ago, where you can count on him to go deep in every single major, regardless of the surface. But he's still Rafa Nadal.
But he was like vintage Rafa. Like not in terms of his shot making, which is obviously big, but he was digging in.
Yeah.
Like he was giving him the chokehold.
And he was trying to find a way.
And he was trying to find a way.
And he was. And he was. He was coming into the net. He was hitting those drop volleys. Yeah. He was really changing up, trying to get in at every moment. And, you know, from what I saw from Rafa's end yesterday, Parsa, is that his baseline ball in exchanges when both players are at the baseline is just not good enough anymore.
No.
When he gets an opportunity to, you know, take Pui, for instance, off the court, come in, his hands, his idea and his tactics for hitting the drop volleys and, you know, that core positioning is spot on. He knows exactly what he's doing.
The guy definitely knows how to play Nima.
Yeah, yeah. His, you know, his fight is top-notch, still 100%. Fitness was not too bad either.
Yep.
And I thought he was moving pretty good too. It's just, you know, Parsa, you got to tell me, does he just not have the heaviness from the back of the court anymore? Or is that something that he can still come up with?
We could debate a little bit. But
is he just become obsolete?
No, what about the 14 pounds he's lost? You know, those are power swings. Yeah, when you don't have all that mass behind you, you're in a neutral ball rally.
Yeah.
Like 14 pounds. I mean, it's a lot. If you go in boxing or MMA or anything, I mean, you're talking a couple weight classes difference. So, you know, does that matter in the weight of his ball over a period of time? You know, if every ball is, let's say, his famous whatever it is, 7,000 RPM. What happens if it's 5,500 RPM now? It makes a big difference. That ball's not jumping as much and not going through the court as much. And so, you know, in an effort, I think, to keep his knees healthy, he's had to drop some weight. And I think he's dropped some muscle weight. And perhaps that's a contributing factor. Because I'm not sure. You know, yesterday we were in the car driving. We went to have a bite to eat. And, you know, you had mentioned something about, you know, he's 30 years old. And I paused for a second saying, well, 30? You know, I understand he's been around the tour for a long time. He has the mileage of a 35-year-old or a 36-year-old. But should that really affect the speed of his ball, or are there, you know, age being the major factor, or is there another major factor that's contributing to that? And, you know, I want to see some changes from him. I want to see if it can happen. I want to hear about it. I want Nima Naderi to get in a press conference with Rafa and ask him, hey, you know, what's up, man? What's going on here? Do you think your weight loss is contributing to this this lack of strike from the ball?
Yeah, he's not the type of guy who's really going to give you that kind of information anyways, unless you know, you're close to him.
Well, he'll say he try his best.
Yeah, right? Unless you have a really good one-on-one with him, and then he'll you know, dissect that.
Or Uncle Tony would tell you.
He would tell you, yeah. And
Uncle Tony would.
Maybe it's really tough, because I think he's on the right track. I think he wants it. You know, which we didn't see from a guy like Janovic early in the event. We didn't see from a guy like Kyrgios. You know, I know John McEnroe was very critical on him. We can spend a second on him in a bit. But I think that you see Nadal that he wants it, and he wants more than anything to get back to that level that he was at. But there's definite changes that have to be made. He was trying to bang the serve a little bit harder, but still only really getting up to the 118, 122 range. That's really not that big.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Not anymore.
And you look at even Lucas Pui, he was regularly in the 128, 129s. Forget about a guy like Kyrgios who's hitting 136, Garrincha who's hitting 137. You know, you got guys like Raonic and all these other guys. Monfils is hitting well over 130. You know, Tsonga is hitting huge serves. You got to be able, so he doesn't really have a lot of weapons left in his game except for his heart. And yes, that's a lot. But at the end of the day, I mean, you had Lucas Pui coming in off of 2 5-set matches, and even though he's only 22, and you know, he's maybe not as fresh, he's going to regenerate a lot quicker and be fresh. Imagine that he didn't have those 2 5-setters. He would have been.
I think Monfils is going to torture him though. Yeah, 3 5-setters, I think it's going to be the end.
Yeah, that's going to be that, and I think that definitely. And I called Monfils to make the same as people on Twitter, like, you're crazy. Nadal's got a better chance of making it there. Well, listen, that's not going to happen, and I think it's definitely going to be Monfils, and he's deserved it. He's put in the work. He's much more professional than he's ever been. But yeah, so I mean, here's hoping that Nadal, you know, makes it out of the, you know, he didn't make it past the fourth round of any major this year. First round Australia, third round in French, withdraw after that match. So after his second round, he withdrew, and then didn't play Wimbledon, and now, you know, fourth round of US Open. So that's, you know, for a guy who is the fourth seed here, I still think that he could have a decent fall and even end the year number 3. There's no reason why he can't do that, but you know, we're talking about Grand Slam glory, and for him to get to that, you know, those accolades again, he's definitely going to have to change some things. So anyways, moving forward, you know, I'm going to take, you know, Joker to move forward, as I think you are. I'm going to take Malphite to win that match against Pui. I think it could be even a blowout. I mean, if Pui can somehow win that, that's going to be a remarkable effort, but I don't think he's going to have the legs anymore. And I think Malphite hasn't dropped a set. I mean, he has just been cruising through this tournament, playing top form, and he's feeling good. And, you know that his good to great team is giving him the right information as they have all year. So watch out for that. And I think, you know, he could definitely even test Djokovic in the semis. I think that's going to be a great matchup potentially in the future later on this week. Now moving on, Parsa, to some fourth round affairs that are going to be taking place today. Let's start off with about, you know, just over half an hour. We're going to have Dominic Thiem taking on Del Potro. It's going to be a nice one. One that I think, you know, you look at Del Potro and you're like, this guy's going to keep going. And
he's in form.
He's in form, and I really like his chances against Thiem. I think the one saving grace for Thiem today is going to be that awesome kick serve that he has, and he's going to be going all day to Delpo's backhand. That's going to be a heavy shot for Delpo to return on that side where he's not 100% comfortable on. But if he can keep that low, and you know that Thiem's got those really loopy backswings,
I mean,
I think, you know, coupled with Del Potro's first serve power and that off-the-charts forehand and the mojo that he's feeling here in this tournament.
And his serve is
His serve is well over 130. I think you're going to see Delpo getting through in three, maybe four sets.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of his serve and then the forehand to back it up, and it's just, and the guy's huge and can move. Crazy.
And for a guy who almost retired last year, said, listen, I'm done after all of these surgeries, what an awesome story, and let's just try to keep this guy going.
The guy's great. It's too bad that these injuries have occurred with him, because I think we would be talking multiple slam winner. In this guy.
I mean, this guy's coming back from injury, has his backhand's at 50%, maybe 40-50%.
Doesn't even matter.
And he's in the fourth round of the US Open, made the finals in Rio, beat Stan at Wimbledon this year, beat Djokovic at Rio, beat Nadal in Rio. I mean, this guy is beating the top guys, and he's not even at 100% yet.
Absolutely.
And imagine when he's at that point. And he knows that himself. I mean, he's a very humble guy too, but he says that once I can get back to 100%, I know I'm going to be dangerous against these top guys. So, you know, why not? Look, moving on forward from there, we're going to have Marchenko, who took out an injured Kyrgios, which was a very interesting match for me on different levels. He's playing against Stan, who had to save match points against Dan Evans. And, you know, he came back and won that match. You know, spending a second on Marchenko, what a great story. I mean, you know, Parsa, I watch a lot of Challenger tennis and, you know, all of that jazz. And this guy's just been grinding away, you know, with one of my buddies, Peter Polanski, in the Challengers. Comes through now. He's in the fourth round of the U.S. Open. He's going to take home, I think, 235 grand for this effort, 250 grand, something like that, which is tremendous. You know,
he's a better version of Evans.
Yes, and I think he's kind of, you know, reached his peak now against Stan. But Stan can be wishy-washy too. I mean, he makes it interesting for us. But with that said, definitely, you know, Wawrinka is the favorite here, and I think he's going to come through. And you know, Parsa, I picked Stan to win this tournament. So, you know, I was holding my breath there a little bit on Armstrong the other day, but I was still silently confident. And,
yeah, right down match point. Come on, man, that's all his luck at that point.
Yeah, and so he's getting through to really set up a mouth-watering, you know, quarterfinal encounter potentially with Delpo. That's going to be an awesome match. And then, you know, going down in the draw, I mean, you know, Ivo Karlovic.
Who's going to stop this guy? Is it going to be Nishikori? I mean, Nishikori can't serve.
What a tremendous effort you're seeing from Ivo Karlovic, because today he is a much better player at 37 and some change than he has ever been throughout his career. He's serving better, which you could never say would be possible. He's hitting his forehand massive. His backhand slice is knifing through the court as well as it ever has. He's coming into the net, you know, constantly, and he's just putting a tremendous amount of, you know, pressure on everybody, and they're going to have to deal with that. And, you know, Nishikori doesn't have the best serve, and his second serve is really weak. And if I'm Karlovic, I'm on that saber all day long, just crashing and bashing, putting as much, you know, pressure as I can on Nishikori.
And obviously, not letting Nishikori get a rhythm.
No rhythm. And, you know, Nishikori is obviously, you know, swift as anybody out there, super consistent off the baseline, but you can't let him play.
And he won't. He 100% won't. He'll keep it at three shots or less the entire time.
And with that said, then he's got a chance. He's not going to blow the guy off the court just because Nishikori is going to hold serve and, you know, he's going to make it interesting. But, you know, he broke Donaldson's serve and Donaldson's obviously, you know.
I think it could be. We can be looking at a fifth set tiebreak.
It could. I mean, I think Karlovic is like, you know what? This is my opportunity to really go deep in this tournament. Why not? You know, I'm very happy and obliged, you know, to go into breakers as much as I need to, even if it's five of them in a row. Even if I do that for the next three rounds, I'm good with that. I think he's fit. I think he's feeling good. And, you know, he's got an amazing coach who supports him like nobody else. So why not? But with that said, I still think I got to go with Nishikori to somehow get through that match. What do you think?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably three, four sets, too. My appreciation of his age and all those kinds of things wants him to win, but it's probably good. I mean, Nishikori is a different class, actually like two or three different class levels, different, and his fast switch fibers are incredible. And but if there's a matchup that could be difficult, it would be this one. In that, I think Karlovic is going to be able to put pressure on Nishikori's serve, and I think that's going to play into how Nishikori returns. And you know, it could get hairy. We'll see how that one unfolds. I think it's going to be interesting. But for sure, whoever it is, I think goes out next round.
Yeah.
Why is that, Nima?
Well, I mean, you have Grigor Dimitrov, who's, you know, really coming into form this summer, made the semis and, pardon me, quarters in Toronto, semis in Cincinnati, and now he's in the fourth round of the U.S. Open. So he's coming to life. He's 22nd, so he's going to move up a little bit even more. From here, he's got Andy Murray tonight in what I think can be a really good match. Could even maybe go five sets if we get the right Grigor out there. We get the one who's not willing to pull the trigger prematurely and who's ready to, you know, do some really nice point composition. Because he's played Murray really close. He beat him at Wimbledon a couple of years back. He beat him earlier this year in Miami.
So you're not mentioning the X factor.
Which is...
Valverde is in Dimitrov's corner.
He was
Murray's good friend and was his hitting partner slash coach for five years.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that you look at, you know, Grigor, a tremendous athlete. He's gonna make it interesting. I don't think Murray's gonna blow him off the court by any means. But to win this match, you know that Murray is feeling great. You know, he's not going anywhere. And he's just gonna have to take it to him. He's going to have to play, you know, hitting the ball early, transitioning, really mixing up the slices, serving at a very high first serve percentage, close to 130, you know, MPH, you know, on the constant. But you definitely going to have to take, you know, Murray to come through. But definitely, I think that Grigor has a chance.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be a one for the ages, potentially. And I think I could see a Murray going... five here, and then drawing Karlovic the next round and being at about a 4-4-4 against Karlovic. And then setting up a juicy, for me, not for you, but a juicy semifinal between Del Potro and Murray. A Rio rematch, which is what I said a week ago. And I think he does it. And then I think we get that Del Potro Djokovic final. Another Rio redo or whatever it is, second round match or second time affair, and I think that we have Djokovic, the fresh personal problem and all. I think he's the one holding the trophy next Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think you're going to see a dynamic where you're going to see Murray come through, you're going to see Del Potro come through, you're going to see Stan come through. I think that Stan will figure out Del Potro's issue, especially on the...
We love Nima Nadari, but man, man.
I got to stick with my guns here, man. And I'm going to go with, you know, with Stan coming through. He's also going to take out Murray, and then he's going to take...
I don't know, man.
And then he'll take out...
Everyone out there, we should give him a second chance, right? I mean, jeez.
I still gotta go with Stan to win this tournament.
Love it. All right. Yeah. All right.
Well. So that's my pick. I'm gonna hold it, and if I don't, you know, you can get on. You know, everybody can get on me.
No, but I think you should. if he does win it, I think you should tell the whole world. What does everyone say? 7 consecutive days, I picked Wawrinka in January to win the U.S. Open.
And I had Monfils going to the semifinals, which everybody thought I was crazy about too. But I just felt that he had the professionalism this year. Obviously, always has had the talent to do so. Okay, so Parsa, so that's what we have, you know, to wrapping up the men's draw. I want to talk once, you know, a quick minute here on Nick Kyrgios. So we saw him coming in. We watched, you know, we were together for that first round match on the grandstand against Benedine, the old grandstand, which he won, and you know, just like awesome serves. And he had a little bit of that hip problem, got through that one. Goes into the second round, beats Horacio Zabalos against straight sets, gets through that. Also a hip problem carrying that. Comes into the third round, Ash, you know, walks on, you know, looking with his, you know, calm demeanor, like I don't care attitude that he always has. Wins the first set against Marchenko, looking good in the second, and then tweaks the hip a little bit more, and then starts going down, loses that second set, gets destroyed in the third set, and then pulls the ripcord, and he's done in the third. Has some tears in his eyes, and looks very, you know, out of sorts, which in a way was nice to see because it shows that he cares.
Right.
And then John McEnroe gets all over him saying, listen, Nick, you know what? If you don't want to play this sport, if you don't want to commit, just quit. Because we need guys in this sport. People are paying good money. We want to see, you know, everybody at their best and caring. So based on what you've seen from... So this is... It's a double-edged sword for me, Parsa. Because he's had those moments this year where you're like, this guy is a complete jerk. What is he doing out there? He's bad for tennis. He's this and that. You know, a lot of people say that. On the flip side, he's, you know, an incredible talent. He's won 2 titles this year. So let's not forget that. He played lights out at Marseille, beating a lot of good players there. He won Atlanta in sweltering hot conditions, you know, against Isner in the finals. So he's got 2 titles this year. You know, then you saw him obviously in Toronto, you know, tanking that match against Shapovalov, losing first round, sitting on the court saying, I don't want to be here. So we've seen him in that state. But, you know, he's up to 14, 15 in the world.
Without trying.
You know, so he's improved this year. He's won 2 titles. And we're still saying that this guy should retire. You know, guys like John McEnroe.
John McEnroe's saying that. I don't agree.
Yeah, yeah. So is that a little bit too harsh? Absolutely, you know, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, this guy's like...
You're allowed to be harsh.
Yeah.
I enjoy harsh. Harsh is old school.
Yeah.
I'm old school, and so I like that.
Yeah.
Say how it is. The truth be told, you look at him as he was in that form, the guy didn't step up. He wasn't trying, and he maybe was injured, but that doesn't give him an excuse to not put in every effort and to run after the ball. If you can't run after the ball, then pull the ripcord. But the whole, you know, demeanor and his body language and everything, you know, it's you're not respecting the people and the entertainers that and providing the entertainment that the people have come to watch. And so... you have to be very, very mindful that it's not just about you, Nick Kyrgios, truth be told. So you're allowed to be called out on it until you change. And he's made some strides to do that. I think both of us want to see him be in the top of the game because he's exciting. He's out there. He wears everything right there. If he's unhappy, you know he's unhappy. If he's happy, you know he's happy. If he's sad, you know he's sad too. So as we found out. But at the same time... I think something you touched on a couple of days ago was that maybe it's not the hip injury right now, but it's his preparation. Where's the professionalism? Exactly. Where's the flexibility training? Where's the strength training? Where are all the off-court things that every other professional has to do? Because if he does that and he buys into what Monfils, for example, has just bought into, you know, 12 years into his career, we're looking at a multiple Grand Slam winner in that sort of talent. And so... I think people are waiting for that switch. You know, I have a second thing, if I can share with you, a second opinion on this too. And I think he's also misunderstood. I don't think John McEnroe can potentially understand Nick Kyrgios. I don't know if Nick Kyrgios can understand Nick Kyrgios. I certainly can't understand Nick Kyrgios. But, you know, maybe I have enough emotional intelligence to realize that I should take a step back and try to observe a little bit and see what this kid's going through and figure out what this transition is. But I can tell you right now, if he does make it to the Grand Slam side and becomes that Grand Slam champion that we think he can be, it's going to be a phenomenal story. And they're going to bring up all of these instances in his past and how he's gotten to this point. And watching the maturity unfold before the world's eyes, I think would be a great story. But he needs to put in the work.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at him play, like, I mean, he can pop the serve. He can hit aces whenever he feels like. His forehand is like a shotgun. He smashes it everywhere. His backhand, he can place it really well. He's got great hands. He's returning better. And I think that Patrick McEnroe came up with a little bit more of an intelligent, you know, analysis, just, you know, exactly what you said. And he said that he's getting injured because he's not putting in the preparation. And that's what he has to attribute to. Like, there's no reason why at the age of 21 you should be getting hip problems. You know what I mean? He doesn't have like a Ferrer type of game or a Nadal type of game. He's got, for the most part, a pretty effortless game, right? Like, he's controlling, he's dictating most of the time. He's not really in grinding rallies. But I'm telling you that the guy, instead of playing Pokemon and, you know, hanging out with his girlfriend all the time, he's got to put in that time in the gym. If he can get in top-notch shape, you know, and he doesn't really even look like he gets tired out there. He just looks like he's physically not fit enough.
Like his muscles aren't thick enough.
Yeah, he's not, you know, he doesn't have that strength to withstand, you know, the sliding on the hard courts and that, you know, crazy demand that, you know, that ball speed that's coming at you at the professional level brings forward. And if he can get that sorted out, hopefully, you know, for 2017, you know, he can do it. Because, I mean, if you look at his results, I don't think he made it out of the fourth round of any major this year himself. And for him and his talent level, I mean, yeah, you look at Nadal didn't do it. Well, Nadal's 30 years old. The guy's won 14 Grand Slams. We're going to give him a little bit of a pass there. But, you know, Nick Kyrgios coming up 21, 22 years old, you got to make that happen now. So hopefully 2017, we see that occur. But for now, you know, we got to look at the guys we have in the draw. We still have some decent guys. And definitely all these guys left in the field care. And, you know, they're giving everything they have. Guys like Karlovic at 37, you know, he wants it more than anything. You know, Dimitrov, we know that he's into it right now. Team Del Potro loves the sport more than anything, what he's had to gone through, you know. So I think that it's going to be an incredible finish, and, you know, hopefully, you know, Stan the Man comes through. So we'll see how that transpires. So, you know, Parsa, with that said, you know, any closing words for this week's show?
No, just I'm looking forward to week two for sure. I think it's going to be some excitement and some great matches.
Yeah, so let's get this banged out and posted on Tennis Connected's website as well as on iTunes where everybody can download it. Make sure to also hit up Parsa Sammy at Parsa Sammy on Twitter and myself at Tennis Connected. Make sure to also check out Tennis Connected's Instagram page, Facebook page, and, you know, follow the stories that I put up on Instagram there. And finally, Parsa, thank you for joining us today live, one-on-one in person, which is fantastic.
That's awesome. Love it.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to also hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. And we will chat with you next week to a wrap-up of 2018.